Well, he won the war. That was a big thing. He showed the perfect grace in his terms of surrender that were given to Lee. He was a rock of confidence for the country, because, you know, the men in the ranks, when he came around, they recognized that he was ready to fight. And the men in the Army thought, well, all these other generals didn't have confidence in us, and here's this quiet man, doesn't make speeches, yet he has complete confidence in us, and he doesn't falter. And his funeral is the most attended, more than Lincoln's. It's funny that his first inaugural address has been rated as good, if not better, than Lincoln's second.
What happened, do you think, through the years? I mean, he's not revered certainly the way Lincoln or even many other presidents have been.
Right. It comes down to the lost causers. The people in the South, mostly disgruntled generals who wanted to raise up, you know, how the South was beat down, how if they only had a better chance. And it's kind of like, well, you had your chance, and Grant beat you. And part of it, too, is playing up the total misconception of Grant's drinking problem. You know, in the 20th century, when the Klan reconstituted and the Lost Cause came out, the attacks on Grant's character started picking up. And then popular media picked up, you know, and I'm talking about stage and theater and then movies. They make jokes, and then TV, they make jokes of Grant's problem with alcohol. And that just becomes a common thing for people to lock into, that, oh, yeah, that's what's wrong with this guy.
Now, he did have an alcohol problem, though.
Well, he had a problem in the sense that he couldn't metabolize more than two drinks before he'd lose control. So it wasn't that he's out partying all night and he has girls all over the camp, you know, because I get that quite a bit where people come up, oh, I know you like the ladies. And I'm just shaking my head because I'm thinking, you don't even know the man. You know, he was one of the most devoted husbands of ever. He wasn't a carouser. When he had the drinking problem, that was on the frontier in California in 1853 to 1854. So we're talking, you know, 7 or 8 years before the Civil War.
How did you get involved with being so interested in Grant?
I was 8 years old. I was home with chicken pox, and the teacher had lined up books on a table for all the students, and she said, we're going to read biographies, and you're going to do book reports. And I wasn't there to pick one, because she had all the students come up and pick a book. But it got sent home to me, and it was a book called The Story of Ulysses S. Grant by Jeanette C. Nolan. And it's just a children's written, you know, a book written for children. So it has a lot of focus on his childhood. It does downplay the violence of war, but it does let you know in no uncertain terms that he was in two wars. This guy just appealed to me because he doesn't give up. As a boy, he was picked on by his friends because of his name. He was, you know, initially, he was born Hiram Ulysses Grant, and his friends would call him Hug. And he didn't like that, so he insisted on being called Ulysses. That's the first thing he tries to get around. So then they call him Useless. And the irony there is, here he is, an 8-year-old boy, and he's breaking horses. You know, and his friends can't even ride yet. So he's not very useless, but he just endures all that kind of stuff. He rolls with the insults. He rolls with the lack of confidence from people and just does what he knows he can do. What better example do you need, you know, in your life? It's somebody who doesn't give up, somebody who just finds a way to win.
Now, I'm no expert on Grant, but what I had sort of read through the years about him was that he did struggle a bit with self-esteem issues, and at one point, I think, viewed himself more as a failure.
He never realized what he wanted to do, so in that sense, he sees himself as a failure, because he always wanted to be a farmer. When he's general of the Army, he would say to people, you have people from the government or newspaper folks come, and they'd be in his camp, and they'd be talking to him, and they might mention about his appearance, because he didn't keep the best uniform. You know, he's a little frumpy. So that tie was askew, coat's dirty, boots aren't shiny. And he would just kind of shrug and say, I'm more of a farmer at heart. He always saw himself that way. And he always underestimated himself, too.
Well, I'm talking with you by phone, so I can't see you, but do you look the part of Grant? If somebody looked like Abraham Lincoln and walking down the street, people are going to probably stop and say, you look like Abe Lincoln, but Grant may not come to people's minds as much.
It does happen. There are, especially living here in Gettysburg, there's a lot of Civil War stuff all the time. But occasionally outside of Gettysburg, when I'm in regular clothes, people will say, you know, you really look like U.S. like Ulysses S. Grant. And then I tell them what I do, and they're like, well, that's not a surprise. same hair color, same eye color. I'm the same height.
Is there a demand for portraying Grant? I mean, you mentioned some of the places that you go around and speak, like you're going to be speaking in Springfield, but is there a great demand for that?
There's not a great demand. So, and that's part of the trick with doing this for a living. I've got to make people aware of my ability, and then I've got to find a way to show that it might connect to whatever they're doing. So I broke into the New Jersey History Fair 2 years ago. You know, it's like this whole day of everything about the state of New Jersey in every aspect, canals, you know, shipbuilding, the revolution, different wars, and then personalities that have come from New Jersey. So Grant had a home in New Jersey during the Civil War, and he vacationed in Long Branch when he was president. So boom, right there's a connection to have Grant be part of this history fair. So the day I was there, the first year, I'm there with George Washington, I'm there with Lincoln, Walt Whitman's there, and Frank Sinatra.
Is there one thing you try to get across to people about Grant? I mean, a lot of folks, I'm sure, they're coming. They may not have that much of a background when it comes to understanding Grant. Is there one piece of information you like to get across to them?
There's always a question and answer period in the talks. And almost without fail, people will ask, what's my favorite whiskey? And what's my favorite cigar? Or where's your flask? You know, and they just sit there smugly, like they're the most clever person on the planet. Like, I got you, you drunk. My first thought is, you wouldn't do that to anybody, really. You know, so why would Grant want to be an animal in a cage you can poke with a stick? One of the most respected generals in our history. So I want to get his misunderstandings out, so people will realize who he was again. Why was he the most popular man in the country? You know, and that, you know, I want to answer that that question. Well, I can say that when I'm done with an audience, one of the most rewarding things I'll hear in the comments is if people come to thank me, they'll say, "Now you made me want to go read something about him. Now you made me want to go learn more about him." And that's a good start, because I'm dispelling a myth, or I'm saying something contrary to what the popular belief is, and I'm doing it in a way that makes them go, hey, maybe there's something behind that.